Right now, we're in depth on what it takes to lure a reluctant reader to a book. We launched our Take It to the Lake summer fiction series in June, a summer's worth of fresh, imaginative voices on the power of fiction. You can find all of those interviews, all of them, going way back to the beginning with Bernice McFadden, on my podcast and on the thread. But Take It to the Lake isn't only for experienced readers. We're going to feature YA and kids' books, too. And here's where we meet the essence of this conversation. It's reluctant readers. What if reading just isn't all that enticing for your kids? And I want to hear from you this morning. And I've been getting some great tweets on this, including book lists, which I love. So do you have a son or a daughter in the house who really doesn't experience that sense of discovery or the allure of a book? Not yet. Have you experimented with a lot of different ideas to get them to read for pleasure? Talk to me about that today. The challenge of drawing in a child in your household who doesn't love reading, and then maybe you found a way to do it. Maybe you found the perfect book series to do it. Tell me about that. We'll create a list. We'll put it on the thread. Feel free to call in with your suggestions or your questions. You need some advice. That's good, too. 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828. Steph Curtis, of course, hanging out at nprnews.org/live. I'm on Twitter. I'll retweet as many of these lists and these suggestions that you've got. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Jeff Herbach is a YA writer. He's the author of the Stupid Fast series, and he's with me in the studio. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks, Carrie. Good to be here.
Danielle Clayton is with us. She's CEO of Let's Read Diverse Books. She's founder of Cake Literary, and she's the author of Tiny Pretty Things. She is a busy woman. Danielle, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jeff, I want to hear, since you're a guy, and you're the only guy in this group of people that we're talking with here, me, Steph, Danielle, tell me about the first reading experience you had as a kid where you thought, I get it. This is why this is so exciting.
Well, you know, I was one of those readers who actually quit in the middle of middle school. Yeah.
Quit reading.
I was interested
in middle school.
Well, yeah. If I could have, I would have. Although I was pretty interested in the sort of, you know, the dramatic pageantry of life in middle school. So maybe I would have wanted, not take
Who are
classes,
you now?
But yeah, hang around. Yeah, my mother, though, was an English teacher, and she stuck Catcher in the Rye in my hand in eighth grade. It was a tough call to make for her, I'm sure.
I hated that book. Oh, hated it.
I loved it. It sounded like the weird voice in my head.
Did it?
Yeah, it sounded like my 3 a.m. self, like, you know, going over and over the details of the day. So
you quit reading in middle school, but she brought you back with Catcher in the Rye.
Catcher in the Rye was the one, and it was, you know, I was a fantasy reader until the puberty train hit me.
Wow. Yeah. Danielle, how about you? What was the book? Do you remember the book, or were you just reading as far back as you can recall?
Oh, I was a bookworm. My dad is a bookworm. So it wasn't a choice about whether or not we read in my household. We did. So it was very easy to get me to read. I went to the bookstore every Saturday and the comic book store and got a new book because I was spoiled. So I was reading like Harriet the Spy and A Wrinkle in Time and The Phantom Tollbooth and The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. So you could practically get me to read anything. So I was not a reluctant reader. That's all I wanted to do.
I love how smug you were about, I was spoiled and I got a book. Yeah. That's great. You know, Ron Charles is one of my favorite book people from The Washington Post. And he tweeted this morning, don't push the reading in the household. Just have a lot of books around. Let your kids see you reading. Danielle, I wonder what you think of that.
I agree. My dad is a reader. So I saw him reading and I wanted to be just like him. So, of course, I needed a book at all times because he had his nose in a book. And it became contagious. My brother, not so much. He went the opposite way. So he was definitely reluctant. But I wanted to be just like dad. And so that meant to read.
Yeah, Jeff, I was just visiting my mother on the East Coast last weekend, and I was telling her that I have this vivid memory of her sitting in this one chair. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Western New York. One chair, back to the windows that looked out on the lake, totally absorbed in a book, lost in the book. And I remember that as far back as I can think of.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually hit the side of my house on a bicycle once and crashed a window, a picture
reading?
Window. No, my mother was reading on the inside, and that was my picture of her is on the couch reading a book.
Are you making this up?
That is real. It's a real story. It's probably Danielle Steele.
Yeah.
She was real engrossed. It was the 70s.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have an image of your mother being totally absorbed in books. How much
reader.
Does the parental role modeling matter, do you think?
Well, I think it's important, and you know, we have books all over our house. But I feel like I had to prompt my son at a certain point to keep reading, and my daughter at 15 remains relatively disinterested. But there are, you know, she comes from a long line of book people, so I'm not sure if I agree that you shouldn't prompt action.
So you are a writer, and your daughter is not really even interested in reading your books, or what?
She says they're okay. She doesn't love them. My son gives me a little bit heightened praise.
Arrow to the heart there.
It hurts.
From the daughter.
It does. Oh, yeah.
Let's go to the phones to Ryan in Bloomington. Hey, Ryan, it sounds like you were a reluctant reader. Is that right?
Yeah, I grew up around a lot of books. Both my mom and my brother read. I mean, they would read they'd pick up a book and it'd be done in the same day. And I was never that kind of reader. I read a little bit in elementary school, but then once middle school and high school hit, I never picked up a book for pleasure. And the thing that I found has really helped me get into reading, and especially reading, you know, some nonfiction and just some novels, is we read books almost like a book club in our family, rather than one of us reading and then just talking about how good the book was. One of us will start a book and then say, hey, this is a really good one. You all should pick this up too, you know, at the library or on Kindle. And we read it and then sit around and have coffee. And like, you know, we might talk about movies. Now we talk about what's happening in the book and where we're at. Oh, don't say that because I'm not to that part yet. And so it's really more of a together experience. And like I said, almost a book club.
Family book club is a really good idea, Ryan. What's the last book that you all read in your family book club? Can you remember?
The last one was, I'm trying to think, it was a John Krakauer book. And I the name is escaping me now. But it was a John Krakauer book, and that was, I can't quite remember.
Is it the one about Everest, Into Thin Air, or something like that, I think?
It was not Into Thin Air, and it was not...
Okay, we'll say Krakauer.
Into Thin Air is the next on the list. So.
Okay, your family's reading Krakauer. I love your suggestion of the family book club. Thanks very much for the call. To Sam in St. Paul. Hi, Sam. What's your experience with this?
Well, my mom always told me I didn't really want to read very much. And then about third grade, I found Harry Potter. I think that's when the series started, you know, hitting the masses. And I just totally got engrossed. So I think it was just a matter of finding the right book for me. I don't know. Fantasy novels worked out. And now I'm in law school. So, you know, I read every day. And I think it's just a matter about finding the one that fits for you.
You read boring legal stuff, Sam, but you'll get back to the fiction someday, right, when law school's over.
But he's developed that track in his brain, right? That Harry Potter made you a law student.
I know.
I'm sure of it.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
It did. The righteous indignity of Harry against Voldemort. You know? But another thing that really I think could work is just getting the audiobooks. Like, I'm commuting a lot and subscribing to Audible. And so I managed to listen to really, I don't know, maybe I couldn't even get through them if I was reading it. Like, I just finished the Natural History of North American Trees, and I found that to be just like a giant book of poetry. And it was, you know, maybe you could just play that while your kid goes to sleep, you know, at work every day.
Sam, I think you're somebody I need to know. You lead an eclectic life. Hey, I appreciate the call. Two things out of that. Jeff, talk about Harry Potter, and then I'm going to talk to Danielle about audiobooks for kids.
Oh, Harry Potter. Yeah. I actually had I didn't want to read Harry Potter, but I started reading it to my kids out loud.
Why didn't you want to read it?
I thought, I was like, my son at one point said books don't apply to me, and it was when he stopped reading fantasy, and I thought, I'm done with fantasy.
Huh.
And I got over it when I was in sixth grade. I don't need to get back into this. But wow, the first book takes off, and I wanted more, more, more. You know, it was about 5 years already into the series, so we got book after book after book and read them out loud. And now my students, of course, I teach at Mankato. My students, the ones who are in my English classes who do well, they're all Harry Potter heads.
Hmm. Okay, so Danielle, Harry Potter, and we'll talk about audiobooks. What do you think Harry Potter did for reluctant readers?
it was a gateway drug. Mm-hmm. And it really allowed kids to fall into a world that was so cool. That's why I love Harry Potter, because sometimes it's the when you give it to the kid at the right time, it unlocks something for them where other books didn't work. And then this one works because there's just all the same, all different kinds of stories inside of Harry. There's a sports story. There's a school story. There's a magic story. So kids can come to it from so many different angles.
You know what's weird to me about the reluctant reader, and I think of this through Harry Potter, is that I think these are kids that would sit around a campfire on a family camping trip and tell stories about witches and wizards and zombies and, you know, and live in that fantasy world. But it's just the idea of picking up the self-contained vessel that tells a story like that that seems like a tougher lift. Danielle, why is that?
I think that each kid comes to a text differently. And books are associated with school at a very early age. And I think that that can sometimes turn children off to reading. And oral stories move into independent reading so quickly. And a lot of my reluctant readers when I was a librarian really enjoyed the oral storytelling. So they liked being read aloud the picture books. And then they liked the audiobooks because then they could experience and imagine the world instead of having to focus on the language on the page. So I think there's a lot of different learning. There are learning differences going on as well, and a relationship to the actual page, I think, for a lot of my reluctant readers.
Steph, you had a good question about this the other day when we were talking about it, which is when you talk about reading to kids.
Yeah.
How long should you read to kids?
And yeah, I've always wondered if, you know, we read to our kids when they're really little. But now that they're 8 and 10 and we really want our son to be reading more on his own, he really actually had a breakthrough this past couple months, but he would always prefer for us to be reading to him than him reading. And I was wondering if it gets in the way.
Is it a crutch? Yeah. Jeff, what do you think?
I don't think so. I think read to them as long as they'll sit there and pay attention to you reading to them.
Because a day will come when they will want nothing to do with that.
Yeah,
right?
And I you know, thinking about sort of the long-term trajectory of a reader, there are so many ups and downs, and people get tired of reading at a certain point. They'll hearken back to the memory, you know, maybe being a 12-year-old getting read to Harry Potter read to you. And think, oh, that's a comfort place. I'll do that when I'm feeling bad instead of drugs. Yes, I just said that.
We'll talk about that off air there, Jeff.
All right.
We warned you to behave, didn't we? This is a conversation about reluctant readers because all summer we've been doing the Take It to the Lake summer fiction series, and I'm just assuming that everybody loves to read, but not the case. And I know there's a lot of you out there that love to read, and you want to draw your kids into the pleasure and the discovery of that experience. And I think, as we've already heard, you know, I have a daughter who loves to read, or in Jeff's case, a son who loves to read, but a daughter's not all that interested. What do you do? How do you push it? Do you not push it? Do you role model it? Do you get these great lists of books? Do you tell stories? Do you read to them? All these different ideas to draw in reluctant readers. If you have some ideas, if you have some challenges around this, love to hear about it. We have pretty full phone lines here. 651-227-6000 when you can get in on Twitter. Wow, Steph, I've got so many suggestions here. Scott says, I was never reluctant, but the Dark is Rising sequence by Susan Cooper made me crazy for fantasy. Jeff, do you recognize that one?
I don't know that one.
He says, 30 years later, I still am. Our friend Carrie Mizrobian, who's going to be at the fair with us, is tweeting in here. Craig says, a young nonfiction reader until I read Stephen King's Firestarter. Saw the movie and screamed, that's not how it happened. Off the page.
I second that Susan Cooper series, The Dark is Rising. It's fantastic. Leah said, I had to get over my snobbery. I was a lit major. And let my kid read Captain Underpants, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and now manga. And Marcus says, utilize incentives of enhanced book experiences. I take kids to the Stages Theater Company in Hopkins. All of their shows are adapted from popular YA books and can encourage young people to analyze and talk about what they've been reading. And I want to say that MIA, the Minneapolis Institute of Art, has a book tour where kids can read a YA book or a middle grade book, and then they'll go on a tour of art and discuss the book and look at art that's connected to it somehow. It's all kinds of cool stuff.
I mentioned Carrie Mizrobian, and I forgot to say she's got some great books to draw in some reluctant kind of teen readers there. To the phones, to Aaron in St. Paul. Hey, Aaron. Hi.
Hi.
Hey, what's your challenge with this?
Well, my challenge was a 9-year-old son who was not interested in reading at all. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get him into anything, and I just kept trying to find something that hooked him. And so what I found was, well, for one, I had to say, okay, right now there's no screen time, and kind of fight that battle and have him get to that state of boredom
where he's desperate.
Went to the book. And then I found Michael Buckley, who we wrote The Nerds. Prem loved that, and he really identified with it. And then I think that just hooked him. And then I found James Patterson with iRobots and Treasure Hunters and the Mysterious Benedict Society. And then he was open to reading things like 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Totally fueled his passion. So
You've reminded me, Aaron, to ask these guys about the classics. Danielle, where do you introduce a 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea kind of classic? I mean, I wonder if you turn off kids, you know, if they're not reading stuff right away that feels like real life to them.
Well, I wait until I know that I've got them hooked.
Do you?
Yes, because some of the classics have an old-fashioned storytelling kind of conceit, and I think that modern readers, especially kids who are finicky or reluctant or just particular about their reading tastes, can be turned off easily, and they'll say, oh, it's too slow, or no. So I would wait until I could pair it with something that's modern and say, hey, why don't we read these two back-to-back, and then we can talk about it, especially if something is inspired by 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Jeff, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I really feel like reading is muscle building, you know, and my son quit reading a little bit when he was in middle school, then picked up reading sort of contemporary things. And this summer, right before college, he's reading The Idiot by Dostoevsky.
What?
You know, so it's muscle building.
No.
I wouldn't read
that.
I don't want to read it anymore. He's 18, and that's where he's at.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm real
he's
proud
impressive.
Of him.
I know. I've never read that. Lisa says on Twitter, graphic novels, Baby Mouse, Jedi Academy helped build my daughter's confidence and to get her in the habit of sitting down to read. To Sandra in White Bear Lake. Hi, Sandra. Oh, unfortunately, she just dropped off. To Liz in Eagan. Hey, Liz, thanks so much for waiting. What do you want to say about graphic novels?
Well, you know, I was going to mention graphic novels, too. My son, who is going into second grade, has ADHD and has really struggled learning to read and enjoys being read, too, but really wants to get to the next level of books, wants to be beyond picture books, but doesn't necessarily like some of the options that he's at the reading level of.
Okay.
You know, so graphic novels have been a really good option for him because it's really an accessible text for him, and it gives him some of that pictures and some of the text still, but it's still a bigger story and more excitement, more adventure than younger picture books that he might read to his sister.
Liz, I really want to put a graphic novel title on our list. Just throw one title at me that your son has read.
You know, he loves the Tiny Titans series, is young superhero sidekicks.
Okay, we'll put it on the list. Danielle, would you put another graphic novel series on our
list?
Yes,
The Lumberjanes or Drama by Raina, I can never say her last name right. Telemeager.
Okay. Yeah.
Telgemeier.
So, yes, there we go. Graphic novels get such a bad reputation. I think they are the best thing to hook a kid into reading. They're kind of a dessert book is what I would call it. And there are some books that feel like meat and potatoes and veggies, and then there's your dessert book. And I think they can be used very well to lead that kid into reading.
I hear Danielle, Jeff, on the graphic novel reputation. I don't get it. They're political. They're sophisticated. Mm-hmm. The illustrations are incredible. I think that's old thinking. If you think graphic novels aren't big kind of reading, wrong.
Yeah. No. The graphic element is just candy around the good stuff.
Right.
Right. I agree.
Sometimes it's harder, I think, to say less and let the picture say more. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Than it is to write a regular kind of novel.
And it just there are two. One with a Minnesota tie now, but Swathia Vashti and Kirsten Cron Mills in the last couple of years have put out sort of hybrid, so novels that are filled with graphic novel elements but also have just straight narrative in them, which would maybe be a good bridge for kids who are really into graphic novels but are getting old and you want them to read more narrative stuff.
A tweet here from a listener who says, it's so important for kids to be in just the right text or they'll struggle. She says, I see a lot of parents push their not ready kid. As a librarian, Danielle, did you see that?
Yes, because a lot of parents want their kids to be reading Harry Potter at 7 and 8, and they want them to be in these bigger books thinking that it's somehow a reflection of their intellect, when really the right book at the right time and stepping the child through these different levels and categories is so important. Otherwise, they miss the good stuff. So I see that a lot. Constant pushing from parents. Well, this looks too easy. Why are they still reading picture books? I'm like, slow down. Let them enjoy and eat these books and get through all of them.
Yeah, I also think there's something, Jeff, to the idea that now this is what I did. I don't know if kids wander the libraries anymore because everything's so accessible digitally.
Right.
But just that idea of nobody's going to hover over you to decide, well, you should be reading this. Wandering the library and picking out anything that is your interest. And maybe the stack you walk up to the librarian with has a spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some stuff that's a little too sophisticated for you, and maybe there's some stuff that's a little too, you know, childish for you.
Yeah.
But you're making the choice.
And, you know, I have real deep memories of summer days biking to the library and sweating.
Same here.
And then having, you know, 3 hours of air conditioning where you can poke around in the stacks. And my mother did pull books from me at times that were too much. The Omen, I think she grabbed from my hand when I was in fifth grade. a little freedom goes a long way to let kids sort of find themselves in the books.
Jeff Herbach is one of our guests. He's author of the Stupid Fast series and a creative writing professor at Mankato State. And Danielle Clayton is an author, CEO of We Need Diverse Books and founder of Cake Literary. It's a multimedia writing project aimed at younger readers. Steph, off the page.
Sandra says, I found with my son that I needed to give him what he wanted to read. That meant comic books and baseball cards. His love of those led to a love of reading, which led to a love of books. He enjoys fantasy and sci-fi like his mom now. And Sally says, and we haven't discussed this yet, bribery. Sally says, my stepdad paid me to write book reports. I started reading to make $10 or $15 and ended up an avid reader, began devouring books for pleasure.
Would you be beyond bribery, Jeff?
I am going to do it with my daughter afternoon.
You are not beyond it. In fact, it's a great idea. Hey, I mentioned that we're going to be at the fair. Steph, I just want to say, we are going to be talking about YA literature. We have not figured out exactly, specifically, what that is going to sound like. But it is going to be about YA books.
And Carrie Mesrobian is
Carrie's
the guest, right?
Going to be there. We're going to be giving away. Yeah, we're not afraid to bribe either. We're going to be giving away books, YA books, to get you to come hang out with us at the fair. Okay? That's what that's all about.
Going.
We do. To the phones to Lisa in St. Paul. Hey, Lisa.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, man, Jeff, I love your books. And I love We Need Diverse Books. And I love the graphic conversation.
Good.
I would encourage parents not to read aloud Captain Underpants because it's a great carrot. But I also encourage them all to read aloud Forever and have those audiobooks in the car when you're going up to the lake. And one of the things I was thinking about just now was the riches we have in the Twin Cities with independent bookstores and authors coming. And sometimes a child just needs to hear an author's voice read aloud their own works and know that it came from a human being. I know that Raina Telgemeier is coming in the fall for Red Balloon, so that's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. Okay. Are you, what, you're wearing the Red Balloon shirt? Mm-hmm. Talk about bribery. What, you trying to get them to carry more of your books there?
Yes.
To the phones to Lee in Minneapolis. Hey, Lee, what's your experience with reading and reluctant reading? Hi.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a bilingual household, and the school I went to when I was a kid didn't really have good ESL services at the time, so I was put in speech therapy classes. But reading was a way for me to learn English, and my mom, too, was learning English at the time, so we would go to the library and the bookstore, and we would hang out there, and we would pick out books, and...
Wow. So you taught yourself to speak English through books. That is not an easy process. Wow.
Yeah. And it made it easier to, understand American culture as well.
True.
So,
true. Are you a big reader now, Lee?
Yes, I do. I still enjoy reading. And actually, NPR was always on the radio in our car while I was growing up. So
We love to hear that, and I'm glad you're calling in. Thanks very much.
Hey, yeah, you have a good day.
You too. This is a show about reluctant readers, how to lure kids who just might not have discovered the pleasure of reading for fun yet. I mean, and we're talking about some ways to lure them into that and to overcome maybe the challenge of, your 10-year-old son who just thinks it's so much more fun to watch TV and play video games, and how could a book ever be interesting? We're taking recommendations of titles that you can push at that 10-year-old and say, okay, take this. I dare you to not like this. So listening this morning, giving us some suggestions, pretty full phone lines here. I'm asking you this morning if you've experimented with some different ideas to get your kids to read for pleasure. And then give us some titles and we'll collect them on the thread. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Steph off the page and then we'll get news and then we'll be right back.
Okay, Jen W. recommends graphic novel, the graphic novel Space Dumplings by Craig Thompson. Great story, strong female lead. And Linda says, my brilliant nephew couldn't stomach the boring, easy contents of books in first grade. But when someone would give him a map, he was fascinated and would read all kinds of difficult words and develop an interest in the wider world.
Jeff, listen to this. Jean says, the Amulet series is a great one for our guy. Jeff Herbach, your son, gives me hope for my guy who only likes easy books.
Right on. Yeah. Just keep building the muscle.
I mean, eventually they'll be reading The Idiot by Dostoevsky.
They will.
It could happen.
Could depress him then.
to Phil Picard. Hey, Phil, what are you reading at the moment?
Well, I've always had trouble with fiction. So
really?
Fiction.
We'll talk. Okay. Latest news, Phil.
Searchers are trying to find as many as 7 people who are unaccounted for after an explosion and large fire at an apartment complex in a Maryland suburb of Washington, D.C. Dozens of people were injured, including 3 firefighters. A fire chief says when firefighters arrived at the 4-story apartment complex just before midnight, people were dropping children from windows and jumping from other windows. The New York Police Department has identified the man who scaled the glass facade of the Trump Tower using large suction cups. He is identified as 19-year-old Stephen Rogata of Great Falls, Virginia. He was arrested on charges of reckless endangerment and criminal trespass. The man had said he was seeking a private audience with presidential candidate Donald Trump. Rogata spent hours scaling the building before police grabbed him through a window on the 21st floor yesterday. Donald Trump says the U.S. government should take on more debt to strengthen the military and rebuild infrastructure. Trump's comments on CNBC this morning go against the traditional Republican aversion to government borrowing. He said interest rates are low now and will eventually go up, making it too expensive to borrow. Hillary Clinton will soon release her 2015 tax returns. A source close to the Democratic presidential nominee says she will release them in the coming days. Clinton has hit Republican nominee Donald Trump for not releasing his returns. Trump has said he won't release them until after an IRS audit is complete. And NATO officials say the U.S.-led alliance is deeply concerned by rising tensions between Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine's president has ordered the army to be on combat alert on its Crimea border. More news ahead on NPR News. The time now is 10:36.
I'm Tom Weber. Next hour on NPR News, we're discussing affordable housing this summer. And one form of such housing that's often overlooked is mobile homes or manufactured homes. We'll explore their role in the larger housing puzzle. You'll also hear an update on the flooding across Minnesota after last night's heavy rains. All of that at 11.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Fitzgerald Theater, bringing the radio experience to the stage with programs like A Prairie Home Companion, Films at the Fitz, and Talking Volumes. More information online at FitzgeraldTheater.org.
If you've been watching my Twitter feed, are you saying, enough with the amazing dogs? Yeah, I've been retweeting a lot of dogs. There's a reason for that. Dog days of summer. I talked with Melissa Faye Green about underdogs and Julie Barton this week about dog medicine, which was such a great conversation. If you miss that, you love dogs, you miss those conversations, I got the podcast for you right there. You can download it. Just search NPR News with Carrie Miller on iTunes. And we've got three more shows right about dogs.
One.
Dog books. Yeah, three.
Yeah, three.
Yeah, just take my word for that. Okay. Three more
whatever
shows
you say,
about
Carrie,
dogs.
Is right.
Dog days of summer. So listen to this, Steph. This is from our senior producer for the show, mm-hmm. Jeff, who says, when my kid wanders the library, she picks out branded books with Barbie or Disney characters. I tell her to pick something else, but should I just embrace that she wants to read something and go along with it? And then Jeff adds, P.S., those books are horribly written. What do you guys think she ought to do?
You know,
or
what
he ought to do.
Yeah, Jeff is a man. I controlled what my kids would read when it came to branding of toys, but there were other ones that I thought were terribly written. Geronimo Stilton, this horribly translated Italian series about a rat who's a detective or something like that. And it's just poorly written. But
is it a Disney?
No, it's not.
Okay.
But it's something that we would stomach. And I had a hard time with. We wouldn't let them grab anything that was from a movie, that was from a TV show, and we would put a stop to it because there's so many other choices, and there's so many other bad choices like Geronimo Stilton.
Let's ask
that
these guys. Jeff is looking a little skeptical.
Yeah,
Jeff Herbach,
perplexed.
Our guest.
Yeah.
Yeah? Why?
Well, just when I taught at Anoka Ramsey Community College 7-8 years ago, and my smartest kids were people who loved Twilight. I mean, the best writers in the class, the best thinkers in the class, loved Twilight. And how can you know? I mean, I've been told by my friend Dennis that it on a paragraph level, it's a brilliant book.
Yeah.
You know, so I just don't know. I don't know. And I kind of feel like letting the brain infrastructure engage itself is more important.
So let them read what they want to read.
They'll find something
good. Danielle, yeah. What do you think?
I'm a big bargainer. So how about you take two Disney books and then one of something else? I just want kids to devour stories and devour and get that excitement of reading a story from start to finish. So some of our most favorite books might not be on a sentence by sentence level so beautiful or poetic or wonderful, but I just want kids to fall in to a world. So with Twilight, they fell in, mm-hmm. and then I got them to read other things once they devoured everything in that world. So I think I'm less about policing the quality and bargaining.
Jeff really likes that. He just got in my ear and said, I like that.
Okay.
I think I have a feeling Cora's not going to be reading as many Barbie books as she's going to be reading. He cringes in the control room. So the phone's to Andrew in Crystal Lake. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going good. What's your story with reading?
Well, you know, I'm from like the generation where you come up through elementary school and middle school and high school and college where you barely even have to crack a book anymore because you can just, you know, look up the Spark Notes on the internet and still get a fairly decent grade.
Andrew.
And on top of that, I have dyslexia and ADHD. So on top of that, there was always hurdles to reading. But one thing that I would like to recommend that really got me back into it was fan fiction.
Yeah.
It's really nice to know, like going into a reading, like when you know stuff about the characters or there's a spin on it. Like oftentimes, and you know, this is just on the internet, so it's really open, but they'll do crossovers with popular video games or take plots of other classic books and just kind of swap out the characters so you're more familiar with them.
Yeah.
It's something that really kind of got me back into reading.
That's a really good recommendation. Do you remember the first or the fan fiction stuff around which book that really got you interested?
Well, I do, but it's a little embarrassing. I'll say it's the My Little Pony community that, you know, they're very, very driven into this fan fiction world, and they have a website that, you know, will rate, like, what the books are, like,
wow.
You know.
Yeah.
It's just a whole open world. It's a whole other world out there, and for kids that maybe don't like to read, if it's a character that they already know, it can be very exciting.
Love having your call, Andrew. So glad you heard the show. You know what's weird about this, Jeff, is we were just talking about Twilight, and isn't 50 Shades of Grey fan fiction that came out of Twilight?
Yeah, I believe it's an evolved fan
fiction. And look what happened to her.
I know. There are lots of authors out there now who started doing the fan fiction
thing, are there?
Too. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So it develops your skills.
Danielle, I know this isn't – you don't look down your nose at fan fiction, right? If it sucks people in, if it sucks readers in, why not?
Why not? Okay. I do not. Cassandra Clare got her start in Harry Potter fan
fiction. I didn't know that. Oh, my gosh. We had her for Talking Volumes, and she's incredible.
Oh, she's awesome. And then Wattpad is a huge place that a lot of my students would go for serial fiction and for other types of books that are probably a little racy. But especially when I was policing what was on the shelves. So I think that fan fiction, and I have been guilty of reading some myself. Lately, it's been Outlander. I'll out myself just because you just fall into a world and you cannot stop.
Spencer says on Twitter, graphic memoir Stitches by David Small is a great story for an older child audience who are caught up in dreams of drawing. Sunflower says, my teenager just doesn't enjoy novels. It's who he is. Science, history, biographies were great alternatives. Carl Sagan rocks. Jeff, maybe for your daughter, not so much the fiction.
Yeah, you know, and I'm so oriented to fiction. That's a second suggestion. I'm going to bribe her to read a nonfiction book.
Some great biography
Right?
Something like that. Steph off the page.
Betty says, I'm afraid the movies have ruined Harry Potter for my granddaughters. I'm hopeful, though. My 8-year-old granddaughter loves graphic novels. She finished Awkward in one day. It really is confidence building.
To the phones to Jill in Cromwell. Hi, Jill. You're a teacher. Is that right?
Yeah, I am. I'm a fifth grade teacher.
Uh-huh. So what are you recommending to the kids?
Well, I recommend reading to kids until they start reading to you. And I read to get my kids hooked, my students hooked. I will read the first book in a series and then leave the other books available in the classroom for them to read together during their reading time.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of series that I recommend for realistic fiction, I would say The Island series by Gordon Corman.
Mm-hmm.
And something that the content is a little more geared towards upper elementary grades, but is fantasy, would be the Fablehaven series by Brandon Mull.
Okay, good.
And a good dog book is the kids' version of Marley.
Okay.
I read that aloud, and when I cried at the end, and I cried every single time I read it aloud, I cried. And it took the kids that fiction could touch you that much that their teacher, their old teacher, could cry.
That's excellent, that she's not so hardcore that she can't cry.
She's not so hard.
Good lesson.
Good lesson. Stay on the playground, yep.
Thank you. Jeff Herbach with us, Danielle Clayton with us. Danielle, what about linking up kids' interests in, like, baseball or bugs or bicycles or something like that? And again, that might not be fiction. Maybe you're finding nonfiction books for that.
Yes, what I was going to say, too, is that magazines can be very helpful, too. I would have some students, mostly boys, that would come into the library indignant. I want a real story. None of that made-up stuff. And so we would start with the nonfiction, the biographies, and books about bugs. And then maybe I could get them, and I would give them magazines. Then maybe I could get them into a fiction story about bugs or about baseball.
Oh.
And then that was a way that I would get them to step in with me.
You are
fiction.
So sneaky, Danielle.
So sneaky.
You're the perfect librarian for that. You know, Jeff, I made a little note to myself when we were going to talk about this that that we think this is obvious, but I think we ought to say why fluid and adventurous reading matters, mm-hmm. you know, to your life as an adult. Would you take that on and speak to that?
Yeah. I was a disinterested student myself, but reading got me through. You know, I'd be assigned a book and I'd wait to the last moment, but because I was a good reader, I could deal with it. My students at Anoka Ramsey could be verbally gifted, you know, excellent, on the fly, wonderful in class. I'd hand them a 10-page essay and they would die and they'd want to drop the class. And it's because they hadn't developed, you know, the necessary infrastructure to deal with that kind of thing, reading a longer narrative. It makes your life better. It makes your life easier. So it's real important.
Yeah, and not just – it makes your life better and easier not just because you get that fantastic escape, but because it allows you to do all kinds of things right. in all different realms.
Yeah.
Danielle, weigh in here that if you didn't have that facility with reading, you probably couldn't do.
Right. I think that discussing the books are super important. I loved doing lit circles and having those deep conversations, because that's when the book comes alive, when a child or a student can really think about, verbally express how they feel about something. I used to choose books that had a strong component of what was the character going to do, so that the student could put themselves in and say, what would I do?
Right.
But it, like Jeff said, it's very hard when they're verbally gifted, but they're unable to transfer those thoughts to the page in a paper. So I like using alternate ways to bring books alive for readers so that they can show you what they know and what they find to be true from the text.
Jessica in Coon Rapids says, I have two extraordinary readers. From the time my kids were 2 years old, we bought them headlamps. And we let them read whenever they wanted to at night. And the headlamp was cool. And it got them to read. What a great idea.
It's kind of kids have headlamps on the side of their beds.
It's like this little secret world that you're creating here.
I love the visual of watching the kids in the dark.
Steph, Christine in St. Paul says, I have three adult kids who are great readers. Everyone needs to read the books their kids are reading and discuss it with them. It really helps. You do that, don't you?
Yeah. We'll read books together, or I keep up on what they're reading and ask them about them and act very interested
in whatever.
They're
reading a lot, because your daughter reads like crazy.
She reads like crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Taylor says, as a parent, I have had to adjust my own love of reading to support my daughter. Where I thought she would love Nancy Drew like I did. Instead,
and
she,
me too.
Instead, she devours anything written by Aaron Hunter, who has a series about warrior cats, and anything dragon-related. Wings of Fire, which is my daughter's favorite series, too. Anything with a dragon. I act interested as she excitedly retells the stories, and I'm pretty sure she chokes down a Nancy Drew book just to be kind to me.
Yeah, I love Nancy Drew, but I probably would like warrior cats if I was getting into it today.
Apparently the warrior cats are very good, according to my niece.
I've read 2 pages of the warrior cats, and
have
I don't
you?
Recommend it.
Why? Really? What?
But if you love cats, perhaps.
Because it's scary or what? Why don't you recommend it?
Well, I don't like cats that much.
What?
That's, no, I know.
How'd you get on this show? Anyway. Jean says, my son's teacher couldn't find a book he would read. She handed him the Jeffrey Dahmer graphic novel. Eek, but he loved it. Okay. Danielle, this sounds like something you would do, right?
Oh,
can't get them interested.
Second.
In a second. No problem. Why?
Because some kids need that shock value. So I handed a kid a graphic novel on the Donner Party, and he lost his mind. And then he had to read every nonfiction book about the Donner Party. So sometimes it's the shock value. Some of my students liked kind of body books with body humor and different kinds of strange things or stuff about aliens. So sometimes I would use shock value and say, did you know about this? Of course you didn't. And then they would argue with me, and then I would say, look at this. And then they would go off and fall in. And that's what I want. That's the best part, when you get them to just fall in. And even if they're reading about the Donner Party or Jeffrey Dahmer, it's something. Their eyes are on text, which is the goal.
Danielle, what do you do when a kid, as with movies, wants to read the same book over and over again? How do you pry it out of their little sticky hands and get them to read new stuff? You don't. Steph saying no.
No.
Just let them.
Let them. I remember rereading things, and they just want to enjoy it over and over. And my husband gets a little more worried. He says, why don't you read something new or expand or grow? But if they're reliving this story that they love, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Do you guys agree with this?
Deeper connections with the story. Yeah. I think you have different thoughts when you read something again and again. So, yeah.
Yeah. Danielle, what
do
you
think? I definitely agree. Or what I'll do is I'll say, okay, you read this two more times. And then also, this book is sort of like that. Because what I find with kids is that, just like with food and it being adventurous, they like something that has some of the elements of things that they liked before. They read Hunger Games, so I could get them to read Divergent. And then I could inch them away. So it's like, okay, read Divergent three more times. And then let me give you this other book. Try The Maze Runner. And then let's see if it's different or if it's the same after you've read Divergent for the fourth time. Lucky number five, let's try this one. And then you can go back and read Divergent again. So bargaining, again, is my weapon of choice.
I hear that loud and clear. Sylvia says on Twitter, we don't watch a movie until we've read the book. Oh, I love that. She says 9 and 11-year-olds still love to be read to. See, there's mm-hmm. bribery right there, Jeff, right? Mm-hmm. You can't see the Harry Potter movie until you read the books.
I'm all for it.
You're okay with
me
that?
Me too.
Definitely. Okay.
Similar to that, Melanie wrote in. She says, limit screen time. Most kids and many adults will get sucked into the screen when it's on. Turn it off and have books available, and your kids will be much more likely to read.
Lori is reminding us, because we were talking about graphic novels, and I'm glad for this. She says, Congressman John Lewis's graphic novel trilogy, March, about the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. is truly fantastic. Scott says, teen son hates to read, yet devoured Steelheart by Brandon Sanderson in a day, his first YA novel, bridging gap younger books. So for your Stupid Fast series, mm-hmm. Jeff, that I mentioned, what's the age grouping for that?
12 to 18, I think, is good age. The sweet spot's probably 14.
How do you know that you're being authentic enough to the kids who have pretty sensitive antenna to something that doesn't seem real when you're writing for that age group?
Boy, I was lucky enough to have a bunch of kids around me, mm-hmm. and so I could hear the crazy things they said and sort of how they processed. I don't think I've matured terribly since that age, that helps.
I'm going to be all in on that after having you in the studio
Thanks
today.
Thanks very much.
Just teasing you,
Jeff. I have fear about that. I have liked having kids read the books prior to them going to an agent or editor. But also, I just want to go for it and, let loose and let chips fall where they may.
Danielle, how about you?
I agree with Jeff. I have a bit of arrested development, and I have a lot of journals from teen years that I can go back to and be embarrassed. And being around teens, you get to see all of their grumpy tendencies. And I just like to put all of those things into a book.
You saved your journals, Danya. Wow.
Yes.
Good for you. Because why? How did you
even
notice?
A hoarder. Oh. I should be on the TV show Hoarders. And I just saved them. I had a little cubby inside of my closet. You move my clothes and there was a little reading nook with a little door. My parents were very kind to me.
That is
in
cool.
there. So I saved everything in there.
I've got everything too. It's disgusting.
Do you?
It really
you do
is
too?
Horrifying. Yeah.
It's horrifying.
Did you have a nook with a door on it?
No. Boy, I want a nook with a door on it now.
She was so spoiled.
So
Danielle.
Spoiled.
Oh my gosh, Danielle. So
great.
Hey Danielle, so great to have you on the show. Will you come back? I hope you will.
I would love to.
Okay, good. I'd love to have you. Thanks very much. Danielle
so
Clayton
much.
Is an author. She's COO of We Need Diverse Books, and she's the founder of Cake Literary. I bet she still has like that little cubby hole where she can close the door and just read whatever she wants. Okay, here's a question from Rebecca on Twitter. It's a good one. What about adults like me who don't enjoy reading and never have? So somehow you escaped childhood without developing a love of reading, and now you're an adult and you'd love to want to read, but you don't. Jeff, what do you do?
I think we are so bombarded by images all the time. I think you have to do it like a practice. Sit down and say, I will read for 20 minutes. I will read for 20 minutes and, do it every day. And I think stories will open you up and you'll
really
start
like
pursuing
that.
It. But yeah, pursue it like a practice. I mean, I have to sometimes still.
Rebecca, areas of interest. I'd point you to, something in the culture, even if it's nonfiction again, that, really piques your interest. And that's the thing that gets you into the practice that Jeff is talking about. So then you're saying, hey, 30 minutes sped by and I was reading something I really care about. Don't think of it as a chore, right? Think of it as something that you really want to do. Jeff, so much fun. I'm so glad to meet you now.
It was a great
Please
pleasure,
Please come back on the show. Come Anytime. Join me for a book roundtable sometime, okay?
I would love to, yeah.
Really good to have you. Thanks very much.